Nobody can be too Jewish.
That's exactly it. You got it.
Shalom and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Rabbi Rachel Adler, professor of modern Jewish thought at Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion, and the first female winner of a National Jewish Book Award for Jewish Theology, whose whimsical new book is called Tales of the Holy Mysticat, Jewish Wisdom Stories by a Feline Mystic. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. It's Thanksgiving weekend after a most unusual holiday weekend. Not the first weird holiday we've experienced this year, and unfortunately it won't be the last one either. Still, I hope you all enjoyed your turkey and stuffing, sweet potatoes and pumpkin pie, and are remembering just what you still have to be grateful for. It's true, lots of family and friends couldn't be with us, or we with them, this year. It's also true that we're in for a very difficult winter, and until the vaccines start coming out in some quantity in the spring of 2021, who knows how it will all go. But until that time, we need to continue to be careful, avoid gatherings, stay safe and healthy, wear our masks, and remember to be grateful for our own health and for all the good things we do have right now. Gratitude is a changeable emotional state, easier to experience briefly than to maintain. So how do we cultivate an attitude of thanksgiving more than one day a year? There's an area of Jewish study and practice that works specifically on helping us develop parts of our character that are positive and beneficial, and helps us work on suppressing areas of our personality that can be negative or destructive. That area is called Musar, which is loosely translated as ethics, but could better be termed moral and practical self-improvement. By exploring concepts incorporated in Musar works like The Path of the Just, Mesilat Yesharim, or the publications of the Musar Institute, started and led by past guest of Too Jewish Alan Marinus, we seek to improve in areas of our life that we struggle in. In my Musar study group at Congregation Beit Simcha, we've been exploring these different concepts and methods for about a year. One of the central midot, the characteristics we seek to cultivate, is the ability to feel and show gratitude. There are various ways to work on this. Keeping a thankfulness journal, for example, in which you write down something you are grateful for every single day, even on the bad days, especially on the bad days. Being certain each day to offer at least one prayer thanking God for what you do have. Making sure to thank somebody today that you didn't thank yesterday. Taking the time to look at what you have in your life that's worth being grateful for, not just on Thanksgiving, but each day. I'm not sure that we can all fix ourselves or change the way we think about the world just by cultivating gratitude, but I'm very sure that if we don't do that, we won't really get any better at it. And so, maybe turn to Musar a little bit and make the leftovers from this Thanksgiving more than just more turkey sandwiches. Next Sunday, I'll tell you just how Sukkot, Thanksgiving, and Hanukkah are all connected as closely related gratitude holidays. And so, on this end of Thanksgiving weekend Sunday, to play us in, for the upcoming holiday of Hanukkah, here's a new version of the classic Hanukkah song Ma'oz Tzur, in a recent extremely jazzy release. Kind of sounds like a classic seasonal rendition, to be honest, from jazz performers Leslie Odom Jr. and Nicolette Robinson. Mo'oz Tzur.
Mo'oz Tzur Yeshuati Lechana Sham toda nezabea leet tachin matbeach mitzar hamnabeach azeg mor beshir mizmor Nukat hamizbeya Az het mor beshir mizmor Hanukat hamizbeya
was jazz stars Leslie Odom Jr. and Nicolette Robinson singing the Hanukkah standard, Mo'oz Tzur, for the coming Holiday of Lights. It begins Thursday night, December 10th, only 11 more shopping days, plus Amazon Prime shipping time, until Hanukkah begins, but you got the whole 8 days, and never mind. When we return in a moment here on Too Jewish, our guest, Rabbi Rachel Adler, the David Ellenson Professor of Modern Jewish Thought at Hebrew Union College in Los Angeles, tells us just how her cat inspired her entertaining and wise new book. Find out all about it when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town, amazing dining, and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a new Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, holidays, and events this winter. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has created a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A new progressive congregation in northwest Tucson in the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Beit Simcha's synagogue is located at 2270 West Ina Road on the north side of Ina, west of La Cholla, near the entrance to the Foothills Mall. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone in normal times. In these days of coronavirus, Soros, a small group joins us in person every Friday night and Saturday morning by emailing me at rabbi@beitsimchatucson.org, the only progressive synagogue, the only non-Orthodox synagogue, maybe the only synagogue doing live services. Or you can join us every Friday night on our Facebook page for Shabbat evening celebration services at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning Shabbat services are at 10 a.m. with me leading them. Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson. We'll hold our services with full music by virtual experience weekly, as well as our in-person masked and very careful attendees. All of our adult education classes are on Zoom. You can access by emailing us at beitsimchatucson.org. Many of those classes, as well as our wonderful religious school, are available in blended formats as well, with some people live and some on Zoom. Just for Hanukkah this year, I will be hosting a daily Facebook Live program at Hanukkah candlelighting time, showing off one of the many Hanukkah menorahs from my collection of about 100 of them, telling its story, and then chanting the blessings, lighting them, and doing songs for you. Tune in to our Facebook page, Beit Simcha Tucson. Find the information there. And do not miss the best Tucson Hanukkah celebration of all, Saturday night, December 12th, Congregation Beit Simcha. It's called For Life, For Health, For Hope, For Light. It will be a blended event with guest singers, stories, music, menorahs, great Hanukkah traditions, and much more. To attend on Facebook and celebrate the Festival of Lights and Latkes, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org or our Facebook page and sign up. If you donate at various levels, you also get great Hanukkah swag. Homemade latkes, candles, a menorah, gelt, dreidels, and more. All available for contactless pickup at Beit Simcha. Don't miss For Life, For Health, For Hope, Saturday night, December 12th. For more information about Beit Simcha, to attend services, our great religious school and Torah Tikes programs, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, and rich array of adult education academy courses, which are taught on Zoom and blended, and of course all of our services on Facebook Live and blended, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675. Beit Simcha, BeitSimcha, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the newest Jewish community in southern Arizona at its exciting beginning years and for Hanukkah. We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Rabbi Rachel Adler is a David Ellenson Professor of Modern Jewish Thought at my alma mater, Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion in the L.A. campus. She's the author of Engendering Judaism, the first book by a female theologian to win a National Jewish Book Award for Jewish Thought, and the new book, Tales of the Holy Mystikat, Jewish Wisdom Stories by a Feline Mystic. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning.
So this is a different way of teaching mysticism and, I suppose, theology. Tell us about the origins of this book.
This book was completely accidental.
Oh, there are no accidents. I'm pretty sure that's a mystical teaching somewhere.
Well, I'm not a mystic. The cat was the mystic.
Right.
I don't know anything about mysticism, really. I wrote the stories because it seemed like a fun and sneaky way to get some more Jewish background into my students. I can't really tell you what the demarcation is between the fictional holy mystic cat and my flesh and blood feline companion.
So are you quite certain that your flesh and blood feline companion is not inhabited by the soul of a tzaddik?
Well, you know, people ask me that from time to time. Do you really believe that your cat was a reincarnated mystic who spoke to you? Or do you not believe it? Usually when someone asks me that, it's a kind of reader who also asks, why does the Torah tell about Balaam having a talking donkey in Numbers 22 when it's been scientifically proven that donkeys never speak biblical Hebrew? Or, you know, if they're not Jewish, they're the kind of people who are bothered by Aesop's fables because tortoises and hares don't ever set up foot races. The kind of readers who enjoy the tales of the holy mystic cat are people who like fables and riddles and paradoxes and puzzles. So I can't even comment to you about what the cat was really.
We will explore the tales of the holy mystic cat, Jewish wisdom stories by a feline mystic, with the author or transcriber, I'm not sure the right term, Rabbi Rachel Adler, when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or kvel, please email us at toojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's toojewishradio18@gmail. Or visit our website at toojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, downloading us at the Apple iTunes Store or streaming us from the website. Very popular Jewish podcast, top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 100,000 on Podbean and a whole bunch more on iTunes. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So, came at this by a strange means, but had a repairman in my house named Igor from Armenia originally, older guy. And we talked about the similarity of Armenians and Jews, and it turns out he's really from Azerbaijan, and that his family is from Nagorno-Karabakh, which is a huge war zone right now, and maybe the most important international flashpoint. And I don't know much about it. I don't think too many people in America do. Can you fill us in a little bit on all of that?
I can certainly try. We'll maybe bring in the Jewish angle a little bit later, but the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict is one in which I was intimately involved in the years when I opened and led the first ever American embassy in what was then a newly independent Armenia. And we're talking about...
I knew that. Actually told Igor that, by the way.
We're talking about early 90s, when the Soviet Union split up and we had to open 15 new embassies right away, and they scraped the bottom of the barrel and found me with my high school Russian, but I could communicate in Russian. I learned Armenian while I was in Armenia, and this conflict was going on then too, also in a hot way, but without the overt intervention of Russia on the Christian side of the conflict and Turkey on the Muslim side of the conflict. Now, let me try to explain what I mean by that. First of all, overarching principle in understanding the post-Soviet space and what used to be the Soviet Union. Stalin drew the maps, and unlike most American politicians, Russian politicians, and frankly Chinese politicians, have very long-term policy goals, which they follow fairly consistently. One thing Russia has wanted for almost 1,000 years is a warm water port.
I knew you were going to say that.
Right. So they always tried to conquer Constantinople and control those straits leading out of the Black Sea. Some would argue that the closeness of their relationship with Serbia and Montenegro is an attempt to get warm water port on the coast of Montenegro. But that's much more awkward for them to get to than the Black Sea. In any case, they pursue clearly identified foreign policy goals over a matter of centuries, not a few weeks or a few years. And when Stalin drew the maps, he foresaw the possibility that the Soviet Union would one day break apart and that all these countries would be independent. So he cleverly and really malevolently drew the borders in such a way that each country included enclaves of a significant minority from a neighboring country. So he sowed the seeds of conflict in the future. And that paid off in a lot of places in Central Asia. And it certainly paid off tragically in terms of lots of loss of human lives over the past 40 years, probably, even when the Soviet Union still existed, in what is mostly an Armenian enclave. 96% of the population is Armenian, inside of Azerbaijan, called Nagorno-Karabakh, which means mountainous Karabakh. And in maybe next week's show, we'll come back to what's going on there today, why it's so dangerous, and then we'll talk about the Jewish communities in each country.
Thanks so much, Tom. We will continue this next week. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor, Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Yossel is a tzaddik, a righteous and pious man taken from the world at the age of 83. He is quickly admitted into paradise, where the angel Gabriel asks him, Yossel, is there anyone here you'd like to see? Oh, Yossel answers, most of all, I'd like to see the Rebbe from my yeshiva, who died many years ago. He gave me the inspiration to lead a good and holy life. That rabbi was a second father to me. I'd dearly love to see him once more. Instantly, Yossel finds himself in front of a large mansion with the name Rabbi Yonah on the mailbox. A servant leads him around the garden to the back, and there is his Rebbe, just as he remembered him. Old and wrinkled, stooped over, with a long white beard, wearing a large black yarmulke, smelling just a little bit of pickled herring. In front of him lies an open volume of the Talmud. But behind him, on a lounge, is a gorgeous, voluptuous, buxom young blonde woman wearing a skimpy bikini. Yossel is shocked to see the woman, but he is so overjoyed to see his rabbi, and he greets Reb Yonah enthusiastically. It's wonderful to see you again, Rebbe. The rabbi rises and embraces his long-ago star pupil. And Yossel, it's good to see you, too. After a moment, Yossel hesitantly gestures to the blonde woman and says, but Reb Yonah, it's not that I don't wish you anything you might want in Gan Eden, in heaven, but is this the fruits of paradise? The Rebbe smiles and says, not so fast, Yossel. It's not my heaven. It's her hell. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, a special feature of Too Jewish. Just for you, you should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. We are currently in the midst of a sequence of splendid Torah portions, rich in complexity, action, and misdeed, all blended together with serious family dysfunction. This week's Seder of Vayishlach in Genesis continues the tale of Jacob, the most intriguing of the patriarchs, a man who rises above his own duplicitous nature to become the father of almost all the tribes of Israel. As our story begins this week, Jacob is returning home to Canaan, having made good in the old country of Sumeria, today's Iraq. He has 4 wives, 12 children, including 11 sons, flocks of sheep, herds of cattle, great wealth in the day. As he's about to cross into Canaan, he learns that his brother Esau, whom he wronged so seriously just before leaving home in a rush 20 years before, is coming to meet him with an army of 400 men. Jacob is panicked by this news, deducing Esau's not headed his way with 400 guys with spears to welcome him home. To try to preserve at least half of his household, Jacob divides his family and possessions into 2 camps, carefully arranges the large gift for Esau, and that night goes out onto a small island in the midst of a tributary of the Jordan River to contemplate his options. While he is there, a stranger comes upon him. The Torah is unclear as to whether this nocturnal visitor is a man, an angel, a representative of God in some other way, or even a character in a dream. Jacob wrestles with the visitor the rest of the night, and finally, as dawn is breaking, he prevails. The stranger cannot break away, and before he can escape, Jacob insists that the stranger give him a blessing. It is at this moment that Jacob is blessed with a new name, Yisrael, Israel. First time that famous name will be used in the Bible. It means either Prince of God or, more likely, one who wrestles with God. And we, the children of Israel, that is Jacob, have been wrestling with God in one way or another ever since. As the angel tells Jacob, "Your name shall be called Israel, Yisrael, for you have contended with gods and men and have prevailed." Jacob survives, and the reunion with Esau proves anticlimactic. Esau comes up to Jacob with all his armed men, but instead of attacking him, he gives his brother a big hug and a kiss. And if all is not quite forgiven, at least no blood is shed. The dramatic narrative of Jacob's struggle and triumph have become a metaphor for our own struggles with belief and with family baggage. We are all descendants of Yisrael, the one who wrestled with God, and if we engage in that process for the sake of sacredness and belief, we too may triumph and reach our own promised land. Even during a season of merciless commercialism like the one we are entered into now, holiness can still be created and found. Maybe that's our struggle. It is that very search that make us the people of Israel, that give us a land engaged in that same pursuit. When we truly are children of the one who wrestled with God, when we choose to wrestle with God, we elevate our lives and our experience. May it be so for us in this holiday season and in all seasons. When we come back on To Jewish, our guest, Rabbi Rachel Adler, helps us see how a mystical Jewish cat can show us deeper meanings that we maybe did not expect. Find out what it's all about when we return on To Jewish in just a moment.
We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
President-elect Joe Biden picked Tony Blinken, his longtime foreign policy advisor and an experienced diplomat, to be the next Secretary of State of the United States. Blinken vividly described his own stepfather's Holocaust-era rescue when he accepted the nomination. He also mentioned a variety of other Jewish ancestors who were refugees during his acceptance speech. "For my family, as for so many generations of Americans, America has literally been the last best hope on earth," Blinken said. "My grandfather, Maurice Blinken, fled pogroms in Russia and made a new life in America. His son, my father, Donald Blinken, served in the Air Force during World War II and then was a U.S. ambassador. He is my role model and hero. His wife, Vera Blinken, fled communist Hungary as a young girl and helped future generations of refugees come to America. My own mother, Judith, builds bridges between America and the world through arts and culture." His mother's second husband is a Holocaust survivor, an author and memoirist. "My late stepfather, Samuel Pizar, was one of 900 children in his school in Bialystok, Poland, but the only one to survive the Holocaust after 4 years in concentration camps," Blinken said. President-elect Biden also announced the nomination of Alejandro Mayorkas, a Latino Jew who has emphasized the heightened threat facing American Jews, as his Homeland Security Secretary. Mayorkas, who is 60, is the Deputy Secretary of Homeland Security under President Barack Obama. He was born in Cuba to a Cuban Jewish father and a Romanian Jewish mother. His own mother survived the Holocaust. As Deputy Secretary, Mayorkas worked closely with Jewish groups and spoke often about the specific threats facing American Jews. Speaking in 2016 at the annual Washington Conference of the Orthodox Union about nonprofit security grants, Mayorkas said, The need is most acute in the Jewish community because of the ascension of anti-Semitism and hate crimes. Mayorkas grounded his concern in his background and upbringing. Among the things that keep me up at night, he said then, was the threat to my community, the Jewish community. I come from a tradition of a lack of security instilled in me as a very young person, said Mayorkas, whose parents moved to Cuba after marrying and then fled to the United States following the revolution in Cuba. Mayorkas' mother was a Romanian-born Holocaust survivor, and he spoke of his parents' flight from communist Cuba. My father and mother brought me to this country to escape communism. They cherished our democracy and were intensely proud to become U.S. citizens. Mayorkas is also a board member of HIAS, the Jewish Immigration Advocacy Group. Mark Hetfield, president of HIAS and a past guest of Two Jewish, said of Mayorkas that he has consistently demonstrated he is not only a strong and highly respected leader, but an empathetic one who knows the heart of the stranger as a child of a Holocaust survivor, as a Latino, and as a refugee and immigrant himself. I'm sure we'll hear more about other cabinet posts as the weeks go on. Anti-Semitic incidents accounted for 22% of all hate crimes recorded last year in the pan-European region, though Jews are less than 1% of the population there. The data on hate crimes comes from a report on almost 6,000 incidents recorded in Europe, Russia, and Central Asia by the Office of Democratic Institutions and Human Rights of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. The organization said in its annual report last week that it was based on data transmitted by governments and watchdog groups. Of the total incidents, 1,311 were anti-Semitic, according to the report titled 2019 Hate Crime Data. Anti-Semitism was the category with the second largest number of incidents after the 2,371 incidents in the more general racism and xenophobia category. Those targeted for gender or sexual orientation made up the third highest group, followed by Christians and Muslims. In one anti-Semitic incident recorded in the report, a woman had her hair and hat pulled violently from behind while speaking Hebrew on a bus in Berlin. In another, an Iraqi Muslim wearing a kippah and carrying several concealed knives was intercepted by guards as he attempted to enter an Antwerp synagogue back in June. He had used anti-Semitic insults before the incident. The report said its figures are not definitive and may in fact be lower than the actual number of hate crimes committed or recorded in Europe. The Swedish foreign minister pleaded with Iran to spare the life of a Swedish-Iranian physician who was convicted on charges that he was spying for Israel, saying they were trumped up. Sweden condemns the death penalty and is working to ensure that the verdict against Ahmadreza Djalali is not enforced, Anne Lind said last week, adding that she had spoken to her Iranian counterpart, Javad Zarif. Djalali, a renowned emergency medicine physician, was visiting Iran in 2016 when he was arrested. He was charged with, among other things, spying for Israel. The doctor has told human rights groups that his confessions were extracted by torture and threats against his family. He also said the charges were retaliation for refusing to spy for Iran. Djalali told his wife he was moved in recent days to a different prison to prepare him for execution. Fox News and the parents of Seth Rich, the Jewish Democratic National Committee staffer murdered near his Washington, D.C. home in 2016, settled the family's lawsuit over a story that intimated he was killed for leaking damaging information about Democrats. Joel and Mary Rich said they were pleased with the settlement of this matter, sincerely hope that the media will take genuine caution in the future. The conditions of the settlement and the payment were not revealed. We are pleased with the resolution of the claims and hope this enables Mr. and Mrs. Rich to find a small degree of peace and solace moving forward, said Fox News. The settlement comes as the family was set to depose Sean Hannity and Lou Dobbs, top Fox News hosts who peddled the falsehood. The Riches sued Fox and a number of others involved in posting the story, which Fox eventually retracted for intentional infliction of emotional distress. Federal judge dismissed the suit 2 years ago, but an appellate court returned it to the lower court. Rich, 27 years old at the time, a Nebraska native, was shot dead while walking home before dawn, July 10, 2016. Police have speculated he was a victim of a robbery gone awry. His murder remains unsolved. His death sparked several conspiracy theories, falsely suggesting he was targeted by Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign because he leaked damaging emails. A defamation lawsuit by Rich's brother against individuals who peddle conspiracy theories remains outstanding. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Rabbi Rachel Adler, whom I first encountered as a Talmudist, by the way. She is now the David Ellenson Professor of Modern Jewish Thought at Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion in Los Angeles, author of Engendering Judaism, which was the first book by a female theologian to ever win a National Jewish Book Award for Jewish Thought. Her new book, Tales of the Holy Mystikat, Jewish Wisdom Stories by a Feline Mystic, was just released, and we've been exploring the inspiration for it. If we're not, you know, spoiling the story a little bit, the cat takes on kind of the role of, I don't know, mystical mentor, although it in the book, you, I assume, take on the role of Gabbai. Can you explain that?
Yes. If you've ever read any memoirs about great rabbis or something like Martin Buber's Tales of
the Hasidim, right?
Yeah, that's the genre. And traditionally, those tales are about a holy man. And in my stories, the holy teacher is a cat who happens to be a reincarnated Jewish mystic. Another difference is traditionally the biographer is a guy who knows the saintly rabbi intimately and is utterly devoted to serving him. So first of all, I'm not a man. And second,
right.
While I was conscientious about the Mystikat's needs, I really did not agree with his theology. And I have to say that recording his sayings and doings for posterity was not my top priority. In fact, the Mystikat was somewhat alienated when I revealed that I was a feminist theologian and legal scholar, actively involved in guerrilla tactics to question and rewrite certain features of Jewish law. The Mystikat deplored these unladylike projects, and I think was shocked to discover that he felt affection for me. And I, of course, was equally shocked to find that I loved this furry little sexist. Even though I don't understand anything about mysticism and I don't have any sympathy at all for misogyny.
It's a fascinating relationship that develops. I should note that this Mystikat may be Sephardic, you say, because he hated gefilte fish.
Yes, yes. I mean, that's one of the things that you notice. All of my other cats had been sort of the Eastern European kind of cat, and they liked the broth from the gefilte fish.
Or the jelly, that kind of thing.
Jelly. Well, the Mystikat just regarded it with loathing. And in order to make his position really clear, if you would put a little saucer of it down on the floor, he would turn his back, and with his back leg, he would make the gesture that he would make when covering something in his litter box.
Reminds me of Salach Shabbati, the great old Israeli movie where the Sephardic guy is feeding the gefilte fish, but he's feeding it to the cat, clearly not this cat.
Well, I've never had a Sephardic friend who could bear gefilte fish.
No. Well, there are some Sephardic things that also maybe don't pass muster with Ashkenazi, but you're certainly right about that.
Yeah, the only thing that I can think of Ashkenazic that's more disgusting is pachah.
Yeah, that is really horrible.
Calf's foot.
Yeah, it's disgusting. Chav is pretty bad, too. There's a spinach soup that's quite horrible. moving away from the culinary, you know, you are definitely not a mystic. You've always been a very concrete thinker. You taught Talmud. You teach Talmud to adults and now to rabbinical students who are kind of adults, sort of.
I only teach Talmud in passing. I'm really not a Talmudist. I'm an amateur. I think I'm a good amateur, but we have Talmud professors.
Sure, of course.
Rings around me.
Right. And so you're teaching modern Jewish thought. It's a David Ellenson chair. I had the privilege of studying with David, an amazing teacher of theology. I'm surprised the Mysticat doesn't become isn't a theologian in that style. It's interesting that he's a mystic.
No, very definitely he was a mystic. And in fact, he was one of those mystics who is an acosmicist. That is, for the Mysticat, there really isn't anything but God. The notion that there's a diverse creation and that we're all different from one another, as far as he's concerned, that's an illusion.
It's a superficial quality. The deeper qualities were all God, yeah.
Everything really is God. And if we understood our goal correctly, we would see that our goal was to reconstitute the shattered bits of the divine that are all the hell over the place, so that we have a pre-creation cosmos again.
In teaching modern Jewish thought, you obviously have to teach something about mysticism, even though it's not your cup of tea. Who is your favorite theologian who's not a mystic?
Oh, Emmanuel Levinas.
Oh, you like the hard stuff, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I like Emmanuel Levinas. Really is deeply rooted in and deeply committed to the idea of our obligations to one another. And as far as he's concerned, that's what makes us fully human.
It's
that we are there for the other. And by that, he means any other that you happen to bump up against.
So if you bump up against a cat who happens to be the reincarnation of a great mystical tzaddik, you have more obligations to that cat?
Or the same?
You have the same obligations to that cat as you would have to any other.
Any other being?
Any other being. And you know, for me, I don't think of this in mystical terms because I'm not good at that, but I sure read my book of Psalms, and in the book of Psalms, everything prays. The hills and the mountains and the ocean and
trees, plants, everything, right? Animals.
Yes. It doesn't happen to mention cats explicitly in the book of Psalms. I think that we didn't run into them until we hit Babylonia. But of course, in the medieval text, Perek Shirah, where there are all of these parts of the creation, each are assigned their particular passage from Psalms, and cats are there, and they have a fierce passage.
You know, it's funny because we would have known cats in Egypt, but if we left Egypt, we probably didn't take any along with us.
No, apparently not. The only thing I know about us and Egypt is a midrash about the dogs. It says that when we left Egypt, the scripture says, not a dog curled its tongue at us.
Right.
And then the Talmud says, and because of that, their reward is that in Leviticus, it says, if there is something that is not kosher for you, you shall fling it to the dogs. That's their reward.
You know, it's funny. You chose a cat. Dogs do not get very good treatment in general in Jewish classical texts. You have now created a model for interspecies cooperation. Do you see it extending to other species, or is it just going to be a cat?
Well, now, you know, I had a conversation with the Mr. Cat about this, because theoretically, of course, the Mr. Cat was in favor of interspecies tolerance. You would have to be if you believe that everything really, all the parts of the creation are really part of God. It was difficult for him when it came to dogs. He had to kind of stretch himself to acknowledge that dogs would therefore have to be part of God too, and they were not his favorite creatures. He felt he was stretching a point in his tolerance to me, and that was... about as far as it was comfortable to stretch.
I can understand that. It was an imperfect relationship, I would say. Sorry. in creating this book, you started by writing these as, I think they were essays, blogs, you know, kind of stories, really, right? Initially. And then gradually collected them. Maggie Anton is a friend of yours, a past guest of a couple of times here on Too Jewish as well. Tell us, it was her idea to make it a book, right?
Yes, Maggie was relentless about it. And I was really kind of embarrassed because this is really not a respectable scholarly project.
It hasn't been peer-reviewed, is that the...
It's not the sort of thing that a scholar is supposed to be doing. But Maggie was pretty relentless about it. And so I said, okay, but I did equip the book with a bunch of appendices to make sure that there were opportunities for people to learn something. So there is an outline of the Jewish year and the meanings of the festivals. There's a timeline, a Jewish timeline. There is an explanation of how Jews read sacred texts. And there are essays on the various kinds of classical Jewish literatures that are referenced. And there is, for those who don't know, Hebrew or Aramaic or Yiddish, all languages in which the Mr. Cat was fluent, in addition, of course, to cat, there is a glossary. I have to admit the glossary doesn't cover cat because I'm not fluent in that tongue myself.
Although it's such a Jewish name, cats, you know, when you think about it.
Yeah.
Tell us where people can find the book and where they can find out more about you and your maybe more serious work as well.
There is a website called, www.talesoftheholymystickcat.com, and you can find a biography of me and reviews and various other kinds of things and directions about where you can find the book. There are independent bookstores that cover it as well as Amazon.
The book is called Tales of the Holy Mystic Cat. It is the most unique book. I guess unique, that's a little redundant, but it is certainly the most unique Jewish book I've read in a long time. And I encourage you, it makes a nice Hanukkah present for not only, it's really for adults, I think, more than kids. Rachel, thank you so much.
Thank you.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun. A place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town. Amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Our playout comes for the upcoming holiday of Hanukkah, Pitachta, written by my dad, Baruch Kohan, for the Festival of Dedication, Lights and Latkes, arriving December 10th. Don't miss For Life, For Health, For Hope, a celebration of light at Congregation Beit Simcha, our big Hanukkah event, Saturday night, December 12th. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org for more information or to our Facebook page to sign up. Join us next Sunday. Our guest on Too Jewish will be the thoroughly delightful, entertaining, and very Jewish Maury Yeston, two-time Tony Award-winning songwriter and lyricist, on his new release, Maury Sings Yeston. My friends, may you have a wonderful rest of Thanksgiving weekend, a Shavuot Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of health and of peace.
Vata's reign is in power. Vata's reign is in power. Vata's reign is in power. Laila, 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 Oh,
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.